In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about our goals for 2017. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 318. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
The word is iTunes reviews. We have 510 worldwide reviews. A recent review is from a username that's a lot of numbers and letters, so I'm not going to pronounce it, but just from a couple days ago. It says, great information, but why do they talk so fast? The podcast sounds like it's being played at 2x speed, and it's annoying. What do you think, Mike?
I don't know. I always play it at 2x speed anyway. So
I know. I do. So here's the thing. I actually do listen to it at 2x speed. We don't speed the podcast up at all. I think I just talk too fast, because I don't feel like you talk nearly as fast as I do.
Yeah, probably. It's weird when I'll talk to people whose podcasts I listen to, and I listen to their podcasts on 2x speed. So when I talk to them, I naturally expect it to be at 2x speed. Yep.
No, I totally agree. So anyways, we love reviews. We don't love it when you call us annoying, but we would appreciate if you could log into iTunes, click 5 stars. You don't actually need to leave feedback or sentences or type anything. Just hitting that 5-star would be super helpful for us. Keeps us motivated to keep going and helps us get found in iTunes. On another note, quick drip update. We're hiring another person to help with just a bunch of tasks. It's really our first non-developer hire. We're hiring someone to help with deliverability and kind of compliance and a bunch of internal stuff that's currently spread. Like I do some of it and Derek does some of it and our support team handles some of it. And it'll be nice to be able to get that under one roof. So I think we have our number one candidate all chosen and should get that going here in the next couple of weeks. How about you? You have any updates?
Well, I got an email from Tyler Tringas who reached out to me because there was a podcast episode we did a few weeks ago where we talked about some of the different books that were out there in the bootstrapped area. And he said it sounded like we were having trouble coming up with books that were kind of written in that space. And he's got one that he wrote called the Micro SaaS eBook. And it's actually being released for free from his blog. So if you go to microsaas.co, we'll link that up in the show notes, but you can get it for free. It's aimed at first-time SaaS developers. And I looked through it. He's got 4 chapters out there right now. And I think he's shooting for 12 or 13. But it looks pretty good. It's definitely a good resource for anyone who has never developed SaaS before and has some solid advice in there about what sorts of things you should just completely avoid. And it's based on his experience building a micro SaaS of his own on the side where he built it up to, I think, $250K in annual revenue. And it was for store mapping. So if you have a bunch of stores that you want people to be able to locate and put that map on your website, then he essentially provides the capabilities to integrate that onto your website and allow people to search for the different store locations that you have.
Very cool. So I was thinking today, it was actually over the last few days, you know, coming up in the late, let's say 2008, 2009, 2010, I was just all, and even before that, I was all about being solo. I think I've mentioned this maybe briefly before, but I think that working in an office and working on development teams and working for managers and stuff, I just didn't enjoy it. And so I kind of turned that into this thought of like, I just want to be solo and I don't want to manage anybody and I don't want to work with anybody and I want to be off on my own doing things. And then over the course of time, I found that I just couldn't do bigger things when I was completely on my own, even with a team of 8 contractors or whatever. And so eventually, you know, I wound up hiring folks as Hittail grew and then as we grew Drip. And I mean, it's a really different way to approach building software. But the realization that I had today was, you know, last week, several of my team members were out of town, like Anna and Derek specifically were out for several days for Thanksgiving. And so was I. And I didn't see them for, you know, about a week. And then they were gone Monday and Tuesday. And I was in the office and realizing like, I actually really don't like doing this solo thing anymore. Like it's been an interesting transition for me of how much my enjoyment of work now is about having teammates and about doing things with the team and working with people and helping them do their best every day and helping them like excel. And then they, I think, in turn, do the same for me. They kind of motivate me to do it. So it was just, it's kind of a random realization, but I've been thinking, you know, obviously, if I think years down the line, and I think, what am I going to be up to? I don't honestly know if I want to do another like solo thing where it's just completely me, because so much of the fun and actually so much of kind of the biggest epic realizations and the big breakthroughs that we have tend to be when I'm talking and working with another person or two other people, and we're having these in-depth conversations, kind of like the breakthrough Derek and I had a couple weeks ago. That just wouldn't have happened on my own. Like, I don't know. It's a kind of an interesting thought process. What do you think about that?
I wonder if that's more of a factor of what your historical experience has been when working with other people. Because, I mean, your last job was working for the city of Pasadena, wasn't it?
I worked there, and then I worked for a credit card company in Los Angeles for a couple years.
That sounds fun. No offense here, but I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Looking objectively at both of those, and granted, at a very, very cursory level, it sounds to me like you probably weren't necessarily working with people who inspired you to do better and were working on things that were extremely interesting. So I would almost attribute that to where you came from and what your background was. It feels to me like you would have just changed what your viewpoint was based on, oh, now I've got this team and I like them and I hired them and we fit together well, versus, you know, you come out of this environment where you either don't enjoy the job or the management and, you know, you're just not having a good time and you're like, oh, I hate people, I want out and I want to go do my own thing.
Right. I realized that it's not that I hate working with people, it's that I hate working with the wrong people.
Yeah. You know?
And finding the right people really changed the game for me.
I was trying to put it in a very polite way. So.
Yeah. No. How about you? Anything else you've been up to this week?
Well, I ran a last minute Cyber Monday sale for my book and sold quite a few copies. I shipped out a lot of the physical copies of the book several days ago. And one of the things I found out was I was looking through the people who bought it because I had to go through and fulfill the orders for the physical copies because I have them printed on demand through CreateSpace. And one of the people who bought it actually lives right in my town. So I have to reach out to him at one.
Wahoo. Yeah, that's cool.
It was interesting. I was kind of shocked because I was going through and it was like, oh, I got to send one to, wait, oh, he's like 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah, totally. Got to get together for lunch.
Yeah. The one thing I have started to run into, if anyone knows of a print-on-demand service for printing and sending out books that allows you to just like upload a spreadsheet of those, because when a bunch of them come in, it's kind of a pain in the neck to actually go through. So if anyone knows of something like that, definitely let me know. I sent an email into CreateSpace's customer support to see if I could just like upload a spreadsheet, but it's kind of a pain in the neck.
Yeah, I agree. Or something that integrates with Gumroad, right? Because I ran into the same issue with my 10-year-old wrote the Parents Guide to Minecraft book. And whenever a new order comes in, one of us has to go and manually enter it into CreateSpace to print it out. And it seems like there should just be a better way, right? Like an API or something.
Yeah. Like I said, I emailed them and asked them if they had any information on how to do that. But it would be nice if there were other options out there that just kind of integrated, as you said, directly into Gumroad so that it's all completely hands-off. So I don't even have to worry about it.
Right. And to be honest, when copies of my book, Start Small, Stay Small, come through, I actually do have a VA who does that for me. And I basically just, when I get the purchase confirmation, I forward it over to the VA and say, please send this book. And, the address is right in there. So it's human automation. It's not ideal, but could save you some time if you get 10, 20 orders like that again.
Yep.
So what are we talking about this week?
Well, we are going to be, I think, revisiting our goals from 2016 and looking to see how we did on them and then discussing a little bit about our 2017 goals.
Yeah. And we've done a goals episode. What do you think, 4 or 5 years in a row?
I think so. Something like that.
Maybe even, because the podcast started in 2010, if I recall. So I think we've done it most of the years. It would actually be interesting to kind of look back, at all the goals we've had over the years. Do you think it would be happy or like the Boulevard of Broken Dreams to look back over those goals?
It depends on whether it's you or me looking at them.
Yeah. Oh, man. You want to kick us off with a couple of your goals? It looks like you had 4 goals from 2016 and I had 3.
Yeah. So on that list, there were 2 kind of major goals. And then there were the 2 other ones were more strategy related in terms of how I was going to accomplish them. And I look back at them now and it's probably a little bit more difficult to quantify some of these. But the first one was to launch my new product by early next year. And my goal was to have early access by April 1st and then email my launch list by July 1st. So I was able to get it, I'll say the MVP ready by April 1st, but it certainly wasn't ready for prime time. And in fact, it probably took 4 to 5 months after that in order for it to get to the point where it was not even minimally usable, but usable enough to start providing value. And we've spent the last couple of months just trying to clean up a bunch of stuff and make it so that we can iterate faster on different features. I'll be honest, I'm kind of disappointed at how long it has taken to get some of these things done. But at the same time, I also feel that right now the product is actually in a reasonably good position and it's looking better. And when I'm talking to people, they seem excited by it. I was talking talking to somebody from Microsoft the other day, and they just kind of called me out of the blue and said, hey, can we talk about how you're using Azure? And I said, sure. And I got on the phone and was talking to him, and, you know, I was telling him about what my product does that runs on their platform. And he's like, this isn't a discussion for now, but I'd love to hear more about it. So it's nice to get that kind of feedback. And I'm getting inquiries from people and walking through what it is that they need and how it can best serve them. But it's hard because I still get a lot of support requests as well. So trying to balance between all of the different things and just juggle. That's been the hardest challenge over the past couple of months.
And so your goal was to hit early access by April 1, and you kind of got there. We give you maybe an 8 out of 10 on that. And your plan was to launch to your email list by July 1, which is about 3 months after that. When did you launch to your email list?
I honestly still haven't done that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I've been individually going to people and kind of picking them off of the email list and following up with them based on their interactions with the email in there, but I haven't done like a mass email to them to say, hey, come sign up. So I've gone individually to people who seem like they're more interested than others, but I'm a little hesitant right now. I've got Microsoft, as I said, Microsoft's coming in. They're sending in a couple consults to take a look at some stuff, but I have some concerns about scalability. And I think that until those are alleviated, once they are, I'll feel better about that. But I'm a little gun shy about just dropping 20, 30, 50 mailboxes on the thing.
Oh, geez, that's a bummer. That's a real bummer to have that concern at this stage, at this early stage, because I know that, you know, you've been kind of cherry picking people out and adding a customer here, you know, a customer a week or a few customers a month. But I guess I hadn't realized am I not paying attention or something? I hadn't realized that you hadn't emailed your list. Scalability, yeah, that's the concern right now. So, you know, it's December 1 right now when we're recording this. What's it going to take to fix that? Like, how long?
I'm meeting with them next week. So I'll have a better understanding of it after that. But I really just want that second set of eyes looking over my shoulder who's got some experience scaling out stuff like this. That's really all it is. I mean, could I start adding one a day for the next 30 days? I probably could. Could I add 30 tomorrow? Probably not. It would probably work. But there's also, as I said, like there's a lot of handholding that kind of goes into the product at the moment just to get people on it, get them using it. You probably ran into this early on with Drip where somebody would sign on, you put them in, and then it might have been difficult to get them to add in their email addresses or to write the emails that went with it. And of course, you can help them out with that. You can write them for them, or you can offer to port emails over, but you can't make them do certain things. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep. To be honest, when we were doing it before we had our onboarding built out, that kind of walked them through it like a guided setup or a wizard, I used Boomerang a ton. And I would just email somebody and then Boomerang it 3-4 days later and check in. And I was essentially, I kind of had a poor man's blue tick. Right. I mean, that's what you want is you really want a blue tick that's basically pinging people. And I think you could use Dogfood, your own product, certainly for this onboarding. But yeah, that was it. It was a lot of questions, and it was a lot of, can I do this for you? And it was a lot of, what do you think? And it was, you know, but just a bunch of hustle is how I remember. And then once we knew the sticking points and kind of that minimum path to awesome where people got the dopamine rush from it, then we built that into code, right? And we built the actual guided setup with the bar across the top and the trial emails that go out to people and let them know what's next.
Yeah. I mean, some of that stuff is like the onboarding issues that people have run into. Those are some of the things that we focused on. So one thing, for example, when an email gets bounced, so if they send it to an invalid email address, it comes back and the software previously didn't know how to handle that. It just kind of ignored it. And it depended on whether or not it came back directly from the server or if it came back delayed in some way, shape, or form way after it was sent. So depending on which situation it was in, it might do one thing, it might do another. And at this point, it now handles that. And it also marks those emails as bounced inside the application. But previously, it didn't do that. So you had no way of telling based on a contact in the system how the system treated it. You also didn't have a way to pause people. You didn't have a way to just mark it as completed. You didn't have a way to mark somebody as, hey, don't ever contact this person again. There's a lot of these, I don't want to call them edge cases, but situations that come up where people are using the software and then they say, oh, I would like to be able to do this or mark somebody in this way. Or if an email gets bounced, I want to tag them automatically. And some of that goes into actual automation. And some of it's just, how do you have a field in here that captures this piece of information? And is that something that lots of people want? So those are the things that I'm still kind of working through. But I am kind of moving in the direction of a public launch. I put the website itself, I got that ready, I think last week, and there's still a lot of work to do on it. But I at least got a new design and some web pages out there, and I'm working on putting a full-blown sign-up process in place for that.
Right. And you don't even need that to launch, though, right?
I don't need somebody on board. Like, I can manually walk them through, but I want to get it to the point where I don't have to manually do it. That's really
That's true. Right. Because when you send them the email, you want them to be able to go and sign up on their own.
Exactly.
Yeah. Got it.
So I can get somebody on a Skype call and walk them through it, but I don't want to have to do that long term.
Right. And by the way, you and I both use the phrase an email. What we really mean is a launch sequence, right? You're not going to send them an email, hey, come and sign up. You're going to build some anticipation. Then you're going to tantalize them and give them a little screenshot, screencast action. Then you're going to, boom, drop the hammer on them. Here's the big discount, time limited for them, right? It's the standard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just making sure. I would hate to see you make that mistake. I know you
would. No, I'm definitely not doing that.
Here you go. Our app is, I get these, probably once a quarter, I just get from some random startup that I must have signed up to hear about a year ago. And I get this random thing, hey, Blaze app has, I'm just making a name up, but you know, blah, blah app has launched. Come sign up. And it's like, A, I don't even remember what you do. B, one email is not going to get me to do it. C, like, you didn't build any anticipation. You know, they're just making like kind of all the rookie mistakes. And I mean, you can like obviously 10x your signups if you do it over a sequence and you build some anticipation.
Yeah. One of the things I'm looking at doing as kind of a marketing tactic for this is setting up stuff inside of Bluetick to more or less just demonstrate how it works. So as opposed to having somebody come to the website and go through a tour, say, hey, why don't you come over here, enter in your email address, and you'll see exactly how this works. And this is what's going to happen. This is what it would look like if one of your customers or one of your prospects was on the other end. And then just be very blunt and open and honest with them and say, look, I'm marketing to you. This is all automated, but you wouldn't know that probably unless I told you. And this is how you can make it look for the people that you are pursuing as leads. And I did some of that when I was onboarding people, and it worked really well. I mean, I had the little disclaimer at the bottom. Hey, by the way, this is completely automated. I'm not touching anything here. And if you don't respond, then you're going to get another email, and here's the time you're going to get it. And so it would be great to be able to have those things injected in there and use that as a more of a demonstration of exactly how it works and what it's going to look like from the other side. Because that's one of the concerns that I hear from people is, you know, how is this going to look to my customers? How do I make sure that it looks like it is personalized and it has that warm, fuzzy feeling as opposed to this was some bulk automated cold email or what have you? You know, it's like that's the thing that they want, that illusion of personal touch. And there's some things that they don't get that from.
Got it. So when they enter their email and they click submit, they're actually going to receive an email, right, that says, hey, this is a sample. Or were you going to just show them like a screenshot of a sample?
My intent is to build out essentially a series of emails and workflows inside of Bluetick that will walk them through. And if they take certain actions, it will do different things. And at the bottom of the emails, I would basically just say, P.S., like, if you do this, this is going to happen. If you do this other thing, then that's going to happen. If you don't do anything, then this is what will be next.
Got it. But will they be receiving actual emails in their real inbox?
Yes.
With this? Yeah. Yep. See, I think that's super cool. I was going to say, if not, you should do that because that's the true demo of it, right? Is for them to really see what the customer sees.
Exactly.
That's cool. So we're 21 minutes in. We've covered one bullet of 14. Let's move on. This may be a little bit of a longer episode. My first goal for 2016, so the one that I set a year ago, was to 2.5x drips revenue. And at the time that I set this goal, we were on pace at our current growth rate to hit 1.8x. I actually think we will hit. It's going to be very, very close to hitting 2.5x. You know, a lot of that help was lead pages, the acquisition, and then their marketing team. Something interesting that they did is when lead pages acquired us and then did the $1 plan and then the free plan, is they actually nuked about $23,000 in MRR. And so that actually set us way back on this goal. And this was just a personal goal that I had set up for myself, right? It wasn't anything that lead pages goals for Drip are totally different. So that actually set us back. And then we've since, of course, caught back up to it. So anyways, yeah, 2.5x, I think we'll either hit it or we'll be really close, something like 2.4. And, you know, given the level of revenue that Drip was at a year ago, this is not too bad. Not too shabby. How about you? What's your next one?
My next one was to rerun some of my what I called life experiments, because back in 2015, I hadn't done so well on them. And this year, I'd say I probably did about the same as I did last year, where they ran for a while. I was doing a bunch of different things, and then things got busy with Bluetick, and I kind of took my eye off of that stuff. So early on in the year, it was good. And then mid to late year, I just didn't do so much. So I kind of focused on Bluetick more than, let's say, going to the gym and like going to random events and stuff. So there's a there's like a Renaissance fair that is south of Boston that I wanted to get to this year that I just didn't get to. And then there is a gaming meetup nearby that I've been going to. Meets every week, but I don't go every week. So it's nice to get out and do things like that and just kind of meet new people. You know, you work from home all the time and you don't get out much. So there's not a whole lot of social interaction. So it's nice to get out of the house and do other things. But I really just want to kind of open my horizons to other stuff, to new things, and get me out of my day-to-day.
That's what you mean by life experiments, like the meetup and the Renaissance Fair?
Life experiments is more like trying new things and doing things that I wouldn't normally do is more it than anything else.
So. Got it. All right. My second goal for the previous year was to support Sherry with her Zen Founder book. I was planning to be second author on a book that she had outlined and was planning to write, kind of like, you know, a founder mental health, like how to stay sane while starting up type thing. That's still on the docket. To be honest, the Drip acquisition just decimated any time that I had to be able to contribute that to that. And then the relocation and kind of the chaos that created, you know, planning for a move, planning to sell a house, shut down Sherry's private practice, pull the kids out of school, find a new place to live, get the mover, you know, just everything that goes along with that was literally hundreds of person hours. And it was all the nights and weekend time that Sherry probably would have spent writing the book. So this did not happen in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I don't even know. I think she has maybe, you know, less than a chapter kind of drafted up. I think this will be on her docket here in the next year. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets it, you know, all or mostly done in 2017.
The third goal on my list was to be a lot more deliberate about where I spent my time. So kind of draw delineations between work time and family time and then me time. And my intent was to work less and enjoy my off time a little bit more and generally be healthier. That went well for the first few months. And then after I got to the pre-launch beta period for Bluetick, things went downhill for probably 4 or 5 months. And then I think things are getting back on track at this point. So the last month or two, I've been going to bed earlier, turning off all electronics and stuff like that, and just kind of taking it easy in the evenings. So I don't know. I'm not sure how to rate this one. It's probably like 6 or 7 out of 10 as opposed to anything else.
Cool. And my third and final goal for the previous year was to make 3 to 5 angel investments in bootstrappers. These are post-traction B2B SaaS apps. So in essence, doing, you know, kind of going after the folks who are building real businesses rather than kind of raising crazy rounds for B2C stuff. And I definitely made 2 investments. And there was a third that is still in the works, basically. And they're having actually a delay. I've committed to it, but they're having a delay in getting some paperwork together. So I'll say that I mostly made this goal. Now, I thought, you know, in retrospect, like 5 is just a little ambitious for me, given how little time I have to devote to this. And just how few, like, really, I don't know, I'm trying to say, like investment-worthy companies that there are. And that kind of came across my desk at a valuation that made sense. I mean, since I am somewhat a small-time angel investor, I'm not going to invest in rounds when people have valuations of $7 million or something. It just doesn't make sense for me to write a check. It just doesn't make economic sense. So for a deal to really be a fit for me and my skill set where I can provide value, which is why I'm investing in things, not just to get a return or to have a dog in the race, but I want to actually be able to contribute and offer advice, insight, and opinions. It's a pretty specialized, you know, it's kind of niched down in terms of the opportunities that I think are really a fit for me. So I'm going to be moving forward, keeping it kind of a more modest goal.
My fourth goal was to be more complete with my planning. And the intent there was to create full plans rather than partial ones, because I have a tendency sometimes to have things more in my head as opposed to written down on paper. Like I'll scope out the first set of things really well. And then after that, I won't drill down and write down a lot of the details until I get near the end of something. And then I kind of thrash a little bit. So I did reasonably well with this. I would say that I definitely got to a point with Bluetick last year where things kind of went off the rails for a while, and things are, as I said, kind of getting back in the right direction at this point. So a lot of the plans that I came up with are starting to look like I can actually go back and pursue them. But some of the plans that I did put together, they basically just got delayed is really what it came down to. So I do have a full-blown marketing plan for Bluetick set out, and I have a roadmap for the product for features and stuff. But even with that product roadmap, things get moved around a lot, which I'm not really comfortable with. But at the same time, customers are asking for stuff, so I kind of have to slot in what they they need versus what I think that the product needs. So just because they're using it, they're running into issues, and it's like those things need to be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, there's a balance here between having a longer-term plan of like, over the next 12 months, I want to do this to revenue, and here's the general idea of how I'm going to get there, I think is one thing. And even having that in writing is probably good. Like, here are the tactics I'm going to try. Here are the growth sprints or whatever. I feel like planning product roadmaps is really difficult. Like, we move ours around quite frequently based on customer requests, based on kind of a response to the market, based on some realization we have of like, oh my gosh, we should have been doing this the whole time. We really need to get that in sooner, based on performance, based on someone trying to send spam through your system. You know, there's all these things that make you respond. So my thing has always, we tend to roadmap about 60 to 90 days out. And I think if you've planned that out really well and have it written in order 60, 90 days, I think that's plenty of time. You know, as early as you are, where you're still getting customers in who are going to find deal breakers for them. I mean, I'll be honest, when we were at your point, we were literally planning maybe a week out, sometimes two.
Okay, because good. That makes me feel so much better, because I was like, I'm not anywhere close to 60 days.
No, but we're such a more mature product, you know, and we have more developers, and you just have to, you know, you have to do things a certain way, but you're trying to just hammer out little things to, like, you know, keep people around. And I think that when people have deal breakers and they're like, I can't use the software until it has this, we would drop everything and just do that. You know, we would build that to get that next customer. It was like, what can I build to get the next customer in the door? So all that to say, yeah, there's a balance here. I think that having some long-term plans, but being really flexible with certain other ones at a different phase of your business, I think is important. All right, 2017 goals. It looks like you have four. I have three. You want to kick us off with your first?
Sure. So the first one is to log at least 100 days of exercises coming here. And under the umbrella of exercise, I'm including both going to the gym and like doing things around the house that are more physical exertion related. So if I'm going out in the yard and clearing a bunch of brush and stuff like that, or moving rocks and stuff around, I kind of log that as a check mark under the box of exercise for the day. Obviously, if I just walk up the stairs and back down or something like that, I'm not going to count it. But, you know, because there's certainly things that you can do around the house that really should count as getting out of your chair and doing a little bit more than you probably would on a regular day.
Is that why exercise is in quotes in the outline?
Yes. Yes.
It's the 100 days of exercise. That's funny.
Thanks for calling me out on that.
Yeah, totally. My first goal is, it's an interesting one, and it's one that I've kind of struggled with and really had to think about. But, you know, I went on my retreat where I got strep throat a couple of weeks ago, and one thing I realized is that I really don't want to start anything new, like in 2017. I don't know if I can unequivocally say that I will not for the next 12 months start anything new, but that's kind of how it feels right now. We're basically, you and I have the podcast. We run three microconfs now, two in Vegas, one in Europe. I have a podcast with Sherry, and I'm still, you know, all in, running drip. And I'm still at the point where I'm kind of recovering from this year. You know, even the past couple of years of just pushing hard, growing drip, and then the acquisition, you know, all the chaos and stress that created. And so, like, as I sit here today, I don't really have the desire to do anything new. You know, I'm talking like stuff that I might do is, hey, launch a new app. Hey, write a book, start a new podcast, you know, whatever I might do with free time. And so I think it's an interesting non-goal almost. I mean, it's something that I don't know that I've ever done this. Well, last time I did this was in 2010 when our second son was born. And I really kind of worked the 4-hour work week. I mean, I was working about maybe 10 to 12, 10 to 16 hours a week. That was when I had that whole portfolio of kind of micropreneur businesses, .NET Invoice and stuff. It was right before Hidtail. And that was a great time. And I eventually got really bored and felt like, what am I doing with my life? And that's when I geared up and acquired Hidtail and then, you know, kind of 10x'd all my previous efforts. So I think the one exception to this non-goal may be that if Sherry decides to really write the Zen Founder book, I want to do that with her. But I wouldn't be, you know, the driving force. I would be probably adding my voice to it and helping her think through some stuff.
Well, I think there's something to be said for intentionally doing nothing, so to speak. There's times when you'll go through like a rough patch or things are just really, really busy and you kind of need a break at that point. And you've been heads down on drip for so long that running a startup is not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to do. It takes a lot of time, dedication, and focus, and it becomes something that you're so focused on and you're devoting so much of your energy to that there comes a point where you just kind of need a break, I think. So it sounds to me like you're probably close to that point? Or, you know, and it's not to say that you're just going to walk away and just go off and do something else as opposed to lead pages, but, you know, like, coasting is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can't always have a goal every single week. It's hard to maintain that level of exertion for years on end. You can do it for a little while, but you can't do it forever.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you know, you use the word coasting, and I guess I feel like I don't think of it as much as coasting. It's just not starting anything new. I still want to be all in on the stuff that we're doing. You know, I don't want to coast on MicroConf. I don't want to coast on the podcast, and I don't want to coast on Drip. I just don't want to like add anything new because it's the new stuff, right? It's the, like you're going through right now, just the tremendous amount of energy that takes to get something from a standing stop to, you know, any type of worthwhile point it's a lot of effort. And I think for the time being, I genuinely do see this as a temporary thing. Like, I do not think I'm done for life, but it's almost like if you've ever burned out, it just takes a while to recover from that. And I don't know if I burned out or not. I just know that, you know, looking back on this year, there was obviously a lot of good that came out of it, but it was a very exhausting year. I'm looking ahead and thinking about just kind of being all in on what I have and not adding anything to that plate. It feels like a good thing to strive for.
My next goal for 2017 is to make Bluetick profitable. And by profitable, I also mean including my time. So,
not ramen profitable.
Yes, not ramen profitable. You know, something that, you know, if there was nothing else that I could make a full-time living doing it. And I think that there's definitely some challenges with this. And I'm sure we'll talk about them at length in some other episode. I don't think we should do it here. Because we talked at length about it very early on, just the challenges this past year. But I feel like it's in a good spot at the moment. And even with some of the concerns I have about scalability, I still feel like a lot of the stuff is well-written enough and that it can be broken out and it can be made to work better without nearly as much effort as it took to get there. So we can talk about that some other episode, but I'm sure we will. But that's kind of my goal for the next year, is to make sure that it is a profitable product moving forward.
That's a good goal, man. I think this is something that, to me, this is like the number one thing that you could be focused on all year. And I think it's really measurable. I think it could be a really good win for you. So glad you have that in here. My second goal is to do between 1 and 3 angel investments this year. So I really enjoyed this process of getting to know founders and of, like I said, being able to offer advice and to, you know, be able to contribute financially and help their business kind of get to the next level. So I would think that even without trying too hard, I'll probably just stumble upon one over the next year. And I think top end might be 3 angel investments. And this is a way for me to feel like I'm really still in the game with these startups, because I am invested and I'm seeing the monthly revenue growth and I'm seeing the struggles they're going through, but I don't have to go through them firsthand. And I can still, you know, do a 30-minute call or an hour call. And I feel like dispense, you know, here's what I'd do in this situation, but I don't have to then go do it. And so this is probably my way of kind of really staying in the thick of things without perhaps really staying in the thick of things.
It gives you a layer of abstraction between you and the actual problems. My third goal is to blog publicly at least every 2 weeks. So that comes out to 26 total blog posts over the next year or so. But I've got a lot of ideas that I've written down that I just haven't sat down and allocated the time to write those things out. But there's still a lot of things that are just kind of jumbled up in my head. So I kind of want to get those out. And somebody asked me before if I was going to write another book. And I don't see that in the near future. But I definitely see that for me, at least, you know, writing about or documenting some of the things that I've been running into helps me get it not just out of my system, but helps me think through it a little bit better and gives me a little bit more objectivity. So I kind of want to make an effort to set aside the time to make that a priority, and not so much to get it out there so that people can read it, but more to get it out of my head and become more objective about certain things.
Huh. This one's interesting. I like the ambition of it. I wonder if, you know, are you like me where a blog post for you is like maybe between 2 and 8 hours, depending on how much time you invest in it?
It could be. So I actually thought a little bit more about this, and I didn't write it down in the notes here, but my thought process behind this was to allocate between 1 and 2 hours per week to writing. And if it's done at that point, then it gets published. And if it's not done, it still gets published. So I'm really going to be working with hard deadlines in terms of the time that I'm allocating to it. So it's not going to be stuff that's highly polished. It's not going to be stuff that is extremely well thought through, but it helps me get things out of my head. Because, I mean, I write on a regular basis anyway. I just don't publish it. So I think that by doing that, it will give me that outlet to just put it out there and give people an opportunity to comment on it or talk about it or give it as points that could come up in discussions or, you know, what have you. I see it as just a way to get that stuff out of my head, really. Like I said, I'm doing a lot of this stuff now anyway. I'm just not publishing it. And I don't think that that's not helpful for other people. And that's one of those things that I like doing is I like helping other people. And because the stuff that I write for the most part now isn't published, it doesn't do that.
Yeah, I like the 1 to 2 hour timeline for you, or kind of a time box, because otherwise I think, I do believe your focus should be blue tick, you know, and that if this goal distracts you from that, that it should not, basically. So I think if you can set yourself a 2 hour time limit every 2 weeks, that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. And I think some of the topics are going to be related to things that I'm running into for Blue Tick as well. So I have some experiments that I want to run in terms of pricing plans, and that will probably be turned into a blog post about what I'm doing and why. And other people might find it useful. They might say, yeah, that sounds great, but it wouldn't work for us. And here's why. But, and that's fine. But the idea is more for me to think about those things a little bit more objectively. And by putting that tight time box on it, then it forces me to finish in that time, because, you know, you said that it can take you anywhere from 4 to 8 hours to write a blog post. I could easily do the same thing, because there's no real end date for writing a blog post. It may take you an hour, it may take you 25, but if you don't put that cap on it, it could easily go forever.
My third and final goal for the next year is to exercise 2 days per week. And I have typically been exercising about 1 day a week, 1.5 days a week, kind of finding it hard to really carve out the time. But since moving to Minneapolis, I have found, since we live right next to a lake, that it is so much easier to just get out and for 20 minutes and just run. In our neighborhood back in Fresno, it just wasn't really feasible. There were no sidewalks and there were all these busy streets, and it just didn't make a lot of sense. So I found this a lot easier. I think the challenge will be in the winter. I've already been running, you know, I've run a few days when it's 20 in the 20s and low 30s, and I have kind of the proper gear for that at this point, I think. So we'll see if I'm disciplined enough to really carve out the time. But I've just found that the more I do that, the better I feel overall. And so it's funny, I looked at this goal, you know, 2 days a week is about 104 days of exercise a year. And you basically have a very similar goal of 100 days. So I think both of us are looking to stay in shape now that we're as old as we are, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the raw number of 100 and it's like, wow, that's a lot. And when you break it down, like you just said, 2 days a week is actually not that much when you look at it across the entire year.
No, it's not. And I, to be honest, I would love for it to be 3 days. I'd love for it to be every other day, but those just aren't realities for me these days, you know, given what's going on. So I don't think this is overly ambitious. I think this is very realistic, but certainly an ambitious one would be, you know, a 3 day a week exercise plan. And for my fourth, and it's somewhat of an honorable mention because I just can't be as specific as I would like to be on the podcast, but I have goals for Drip, basically. And these days, you know, there are some secret revenue goals, although I'm not as in charge of that as I used to be, given that Lead Pages, you know, handles the marketing so well. I have more product goals about getting certain features out and just making it basically the best marketing automation tool available. So I'm not going to sit and lay out the roadmap of everything we're going to build, but I definitely have some very specific things that in the next 12 months, if we don't build, I will be displeased. So maybe, you know, by the time we get back here next year, I should be able to point backwards and say, hey, it's when we launched this and that. Those are the three components that I was trying to get out. So apologies for the vagueness in advance, but in retrospect, you know, I'll be able to talk a little more about it.
Awesome. Well, I think that about wraps us up. I'm sure we'll be revisiting some of these throughout the year, and probably makes sense to take a look at these in April or May or so, and just make sure that we're at least on target for some of these. And if we're not, we can start revisiting that.
I agree. And as a listener, if you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.